It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
But we have to take steps to harden our schools so that they're less vulnerable to attack. This includes allowing well-trained and certified school personnel to carry concealed firearms. At some point, you need volume. I don't know that a school is going to be able to hire 100 security guards that are armed. Plus, you know, I got to watch some deputy sheriffs performing this weekend. They weren't exactly Medal of Honor winners. All right. The way they performed was, frankly, disgusting. They were listening to what was going on. The one in particular, he was early. Then you had three others that probably a similar deal a little bit later, but a similar kind of a thing. You know, I really believe you don't know until you test it. But I think I really believe I'd run in there even if I didn't have a weapon. And I think most of the people in this room would have done that, too, because I know most of you. But the way they performed was really a disgrace.
President of the United States speaking to the governors of the United States, I think 35 out of the 50 in that room yesterday. Sandy Rios with you. You know, we heard President Trump speak last week at CPAC, and the way he laid the case out on protecting our schools was very salient, excellent, very impassioned. I don't know if you got a chance to hear it, because in the sound clips, they just don't, you know, they showed the part where he talks about his bald spot, which was hilarious, by the way, but they never talk about them, seldom let you hear the meat of what he actually says. So I want to give you an example of that. We're going to talk about this shooting again today because I have a lot of things to tell you that you may not be hearing. And so stay with me. But I want you to hear, first of all, this is John Roberts on Fox, who always presents President Trump in the worst possible light. I can tell you that. And I want to demonstrate this just a little bit. John is talking about this governor's conference, and this is how he tells the story. Let's listen.
In his third major listening session, President Trump met with most of the nation's governors at the White House today, insisting the best way to deter school shootings is to let killers know they won't make it out alive.
The bad guy has to understand that there's a big price to pay when they mess around with our students. They have to know. They walk in, they're going to probably end up dead. And if they know they're going to end up dead, they're not going into that school.
But on his proposal to train and arm qualified members of school faculty and staff, President Trump got pushback from Washington's Democratic Governor Jay Inslee.
I've listened to the first grade teachers that don't want to be pistol packing first grade teachers. I've listened to law enforcement who have said they don't want to have to train teachers as law enforcement agencies, which takes about 6 months. I just suggest we need a little less tweeting here, a little more listening. And let's just take that off the table and move forward.
It's not just Democrats who oppose the idea. Florida's Republican Governor Rick Scott, a staunch supporter of President Trump, says educators should educate. Protecting schools is a job he wants law enforcement to take on.
I'm not waiting for the federal government. We're going to invest $500 million. We're going to have a significant law enforcement presence at every public school in our state.
The White House today wouldn't weigh in on calls for Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel to either step down or be investigated. But President Trump again lashed out at Deputy Scott Peterson and possibly others for not rushing into the school to take on the shooter, saying he would have done it differently.
Let's interrupt that because we've heard what President Trump, heard that in the opening clip. We'll come back to that. But my point is a couple of things. John talks about how these governors, even the Republicans, you know, are against arming teachers. That's what he emphasized. But he conveniently left out at the same meeting, speaking immediately after the governor of Washington, because I watched the whole clip. The governor of Washington, by the way, in the Seattle Times was praised as having challenged the president, you know, a little less tweeting, a little more whatever, fill in the blanks. I've talked to first grade teachers. They don't want to arm themselves. in the classroom, et cetera. Of course, no one's asking first grade teachers to arm themselves. This is a voluntary program. It's a suggestion. But according to John, Democrats and Republicans, you know, they all of them are, you know, this is just an icky idea that teachers should be armed. I want you to hear what he left out. This is Governor Greg Abbott speaking immediately following the Washington governor, the part that you didn't hear. Let's listen.
And I think with that in mind, I'll call on Greg Abbott, great governor of Texas. Greg?
Texas authorized schools to adopt policies to implement a school marshal program where individuals would be trained to have a weapon,
right,
and to be able to use that weapon. And we now have well over 100 school districts in the state of Texas where teachers or other people who work in the school do carry a weapon and are trained to be able to respond to an attack that occurs. Now, it's not always a school teacher. It could be a coach. It could be an administrator. It could be anybody who works in that school. But it's a well-thought-out program with a lot of training in advance. And candidly, some school districts, they promote it because they will have signs out front, a warning sign, that be aware there are armed personnel on campus, warning anybody coming on there that they, if they attempt to cause any harm, they're going to be in trouble.
Well, I think that's great. And so essentially what you're saying is that when a sick individual comes into that school, they can expect major trouble, right? Major trouble. The bullets are going to be going toward him also. And I think that's great. And you know what's going to happen? Nobody's going into that school, Greg. That's a big difference. That was really well said. Thank you very much.
All right. So that's like more of the story that you're not going to hear. We're hearing constantly, you know, that teachers, school districts don't want to do this. But look, I don't believe that that's true. And I know it isn't true because of what Governor Abbott said. Obviously, it's not the mainstream view of school districts around the country because they are completely populated by liberals, leftists would be a better term, because it is disastrous, really, what's happened in our schools. Do we not know this? And it also translates to this, and I'm going to make the case in ways that you may not have heard that are so alarming, so alarming. It would make you wonder. As I was reading this stuff, I thought, our kids, we got to get them out of schools. They're not safe. The people that are over them, leading them, supposedly protecting them, have lost their minds. And I will make that case in a second, but I want to talk about the sheriff Israel, Scott Israel, who was out in front as soon as the shooting took place, making all of his statements. We're learning more things about Scott Israel that I want to share with you. Phil Keating did a report last night. Let's listen to his report first, and then I'll fill in some of those blanks. Let's listen.
I could only take responsibility for what I knew about. I've given amazing leadership.
Broward County, Florida Sheriff Scott Israel, suddenly on the defensive for the job he's doing as sheriff of Florida's second most populous county. More than 70 state lawmakers, all Republican, have called on Republican Governor Rick Scott to suspend Israel, who was elected as a Democrat, for incompetence and neglect of duty less than 2 weeks since 19-year-old former student Nicholas Cruz confessed to killing 17 people inside Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Sheriff Israel acknowledged his deputies were called out nearly two dozen times to deal with a volatile and gun-obsessed Cruz, but never took it further. The governor has now ordered the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to investigate.
The local sheriff's department, they've got to be completely transparent. We have to do a thorough investigation, and whoever didn't do their job has to be held accountable.
The National Rifle Association spokesperson faults the man at the top for not using his authority to arrest Cruz, adding,
"And I wish that as much attention were given to the Broward County Sheriff and their abdication of duty as trying to blame 5 million law-abiding gun owners all across the country."
Just Thursday, the sheriff shocked the community further when he said his armed deputy assigned to guard the high school failed to enter the freshman building as the bullets were flying.
At this point, one deputy was remiss dereliction of duty, and he's now no longer with this agency.
That resource officer's attorney pushed back today, saying Scott Peterson was not a coward and evidence will exonerate his actions. Amid reports that upon arriving on scene, three other deputies also took up positions behind cars instead of rushing into the school, the sheriff says he is looking into that. But Sunday, Sheriff Israel said he will absolutely not resign.
You don't measure a person's leadership by a deputy not going in.
All right. Well, that was at least a portion of what he had to say. We get the gist of it. Scott Israel speaking in his own defense. So now let's talk about this a little bit. In fact, a lot. When this shooting happened, it was a week ago last Thursday. We're learning all kinds of things. Of course, immediately the conversation turned to gun control, because it always does when these shootings take place. The left uses it as an opportunity to take away Second Amendment's rights. We've seen companies sever their ties with the NRA. We saw the students, and I will stand by what I said, having scripts written for them and words put in their mouths. These young kids who don't have any idea, they don't have enough life experience to express the things they're expressing, where we have to go after the NRA, destroy the NRA. Who do you think told them that? You think those kids know about the NRA? They're only kids. They're just kids, for heaven's sake. So now they're leading, of course, this nationwide charge to reduce reduce the access to guns, to more gun restrictions. You fill in the blanks. But meanwhile, we're learning so much more. We've learned about the FBI's failure to respond to very direct reports, even from people close to the shooter, to Nicholas Cruz, not doing anything about that. So that's a failure. Then we're learning about these deputies who did not go in. And then we're learning more things, which I'm going to share with you. I think it's very interesting that Scott Israel, the sheriff, should have gone before a camera and a microphone and called out one of his deputies, Scott Peterson, by name, and basically said that he was a coward and basically blamed him for not going in. Did you not think that was strange? Look, I know none of us support a deputy cowering outside and not going in to help the kids, but it is very odd that before any investigation has taken place, or this deputy, Scott Peterson, has any chance to defend himself, the sheriff is out naming his name. I'm sure the sheriff knew when he did that he would be putting Scott Peterson's life in danger, his family's life in danger, which is what's happened. So isn't that odd? And so now we're looking, to see what's going on in that department. What's going on with that sheriff? Why would he do that? And what happened that 39 times they got calls to Nick Cruz's home and they did nothing? What's up with that? So people are asking questions, and rightfully so. By the way, Scott Peterson is fighting back. He said his actions were appropriate under the circumstances. He says that he thought the shooting was taking place outside the building. I heard another report that said that he thought it was firecrackers. Not sure about that. I'm not defending his actions because I don't know. But I do think it's very, very odd that his boss would rush out to a microphone and call out his name and put his life and his family's life in danger and blame him for not going in until they had looked into it. That doesn't make sense. Wouldn't you, under any circumstance, defend your employee? I certainly would. I would say until we know. What happened? Maybe he was having an appendicitis attack and he couldn't go. Who knows? But you would not put your deputy by name in that kind of danger. It doesn't make sense unless there were other things going on. And that's what I want to talk about next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You shall not murder. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. This is the sixth commandment of the Ten Commandments. You shall not murder. We are asking schools all over America to put this on their marquees, put this on their signs out in front of their school for 1 week to remind America's students that innocent life is precious. Help us spread the word about this campaign to your friends and family. Please go to our website, afa.net, and sign our open letter to America's schools. We need to proclaim this message, "You shall not murder," across the land. Why? Because gun control alone will not solve matters of the heart. We need our young people to understand that murder is a violation of God's law, and also it's a violation of the laws all across this land. So help us. Go to afa.net and spread the word.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Do you feel that changes in life are hard to accept?
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
Change is often unsettling. It can lead to a loss of hope and insecurity. A fact of life is the only thing that's certain is change. The prophet Isaiah said, "The former things I declared of old, and suddenly I did them, and they came to pass." In the margin of my Bible, I have six specific dates noted next to this verse. These were times when God was preparing me for major changes in my life. Jesus prepares us and doesn't leave us alone in the change process. Hope comes from trusting Jesus in the midst of huge change.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's growing outrage over the Broward County Sheriff's Department, in particular, Sheriff Steve Israel, a Democrat. Republican lawmakers are demanding he be removed from office over his department's response to the school shooting in Parkland, Florida. Sheriff Israel used a national town hall meeting as a platform to attack the National Rifle Association and Republicans, when in fact he already knew that an armed deputy sheriff stood down and did not engage the gunman. A stark contrast to the bravery demonstrated by junior ROTC cadets and teachers like Aaron Fies. Coach Fies ran towards the killing field without a weapon, without body armor. He used his body as a human shield, taking bullet after bullet after bullet. And as Coach Fies sacrificed his life to save those boys and girls, a deputy sheriff armed with a gun stood down. Quite frankly, that's not just cowardice, that's criminal. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We'll turn our grief into action. We have to have action. This includes allowing well-trained and certified school personnel to carry concealed firearms. Bump stocks, we're writing that out. I'm writing that out myself. I don't care if Congress does it or not. I'm writing it out myself. Don't worry about the NRA. They're on our side. You guys, half of you are so afraid of the NRA. There's nothing to be afraid of. We must pursue common sense measures that protect the constitutional rights of law-abiding Americans while keeping guns out of the hands of those who pose a threat to themselves and to others. And we're going to have to start talking about mental institutions, because a lot of the folks in this room closed their mental institutions.
All right, President Trump weighing in even further on this gun control issue. Don't you have a sort of the feeling that there's an adult sort of, you know, there's an adult thinking about these things? I am grateful that he has wisdom when it comes to this. I don't know what the final decision is going to be, but he makes a lot of sense when he talks about certainly arming willing teachers, capable teachers, people willing to be trained, and those that are trained, or staff members, so that the school is not a gun-free zone. As we have said before, John Lott has done lots of research on this, Professor John Lott, and discovered that all of these mass shootings take place in gun-free zones. Whether it's movie theaters or restaurants or schools, they don't ever go to courtrooms and do this. They don't even, they go to free places where there are no guns. So we just might as well advertise, bring in your guns and shoot whoever you want. Whether it's college campuses or schools, to people who are deranged. They're not so deranged, but that they don't understand that they're in more danger where other people can carry guns. So that's the point the president's making. I also want to make another point before I jump into what the main thing, the main course today of what I want to tell you about. Remember that was it a year ago last spring that Steve Scalise and the Republicans were training in that ball field in Alexandria. And when a shooter armed with all of these guns came into the parking lot and asked Mo Brooks, who was leaving for some reason at that time, are those Republicans who was on the field? And he goes in and nearly kills Steve Scalise and tries to kill multiple other congressmen. Remember that? What you might not remember is not a single Democratic congressman or voice asked for more gun control after that. Not anything. They asked for nothing. They didn't. It hardly made the news cycle. It's as though people have already forgotten it. And so keep in mind that this is a very politicized environment, politicized in the very worst possible way, where it doesn't, life and death doesn't matter. The kids' lives don't matter. They're just a tool to use to expedite some sort of a political gain. And of course, the political gain for the left is to take away guns because that's how control happens. This is what totalitarian societies do. They take away guns and then they rule the people when the people cannot defend themselves. And that's why we fight so hard to maintain our ability to carry our guns. Our founding fathers knew all about that. And that's why they wrote it, gave us that Second Amendment. All right. So Scott Israel is becoming a very curious figure. And when last week, when I was not, I was talking about other things with you because I was at CPAC, so I wasn't able to tell you this. But there was a Twitter strand that came out from a media outlet called Last Refuge, and I read it, and it triggered a memory in me. But let me read to you a little bit about what this strand says. This person writing this says, "I spent about 18 months investigating Broward and Miami-Dade school policies and how those policies transfer to law enforcement practices." And what he found was they had implemented a program in Miami-Dade to stop, to have a quota for arresting students or minors because the allegation was that they were arresting too many minors. And so they decided they would meet their monthly quota, and then after that, no matter what the juveniles did, they wouldn't do anything. There would be no arrests. They even entered into this complicated scheme to cover up what they were finding. People would have, there were robberies, armed robberies, all kinds of crimes being committed. Gangs found out about this policy, according to The Last Refuge, and began to use juveniles to do their crimes. And they would often, they knew that there was a quota, so they waited the end of the month, and then they could do anything they wanted to, and nothing happened. The police did not investigate. No charges were brought. In fact, deputies were engaged in covering up evidence. They would recover evidence, stolen evidence, and they'd have to mislabel it, change files, change the records. It became a complete, according to Last Refuge, a totally corrupt situation. And he gives tons of documents here explaining and proving his point. So here he says, "The sheriff and police chief could always deny the violent acts, the assaults, the rapes, the beatings. He could deny they were being ignored. That's why the good guys in the police department gave the evidence of the stolen merchandise. That physical evidence couldn't be ignored and proved the scheme." So they did do an investigation about this, but nothing happened after the investigation. So he claims in Last Refuge, this person, that from 2012 to 2018, it only got worse. "In Broward and Miami-Dade, it is almost impossible for a student to get arrested. The staff within the upper levels of the LEO kept track of arrests, and when a certain number is reached, everything was excused." Understanding the risk behind the scheme, it became increasingly important to put the best corrupt cops in the school. Best, as in smartest. Those SROs became the ones who were best at hiding unlawful conduct. Again, over time, the most corrupt police officers within the system became the police inside the schools. These officers were those who are best skilled at identifying the political objectives and instructions. Those school cops also have special privileges. It's a great gig. They get free on-campus housing close to the schools they are assigned to. They're crooked as blank, and the criminal kids know just how to play them. It's a game, and it's also an open secret. And then I want to move into something more substantive now. That was a Twitter strand that was brought to my attention last week, but now there's a complete article about this. What that did was trigger in my mind something that happened during the Obama administration. I had forgotten about this, but I remember that this is what I remembered at the time, that Eric Holder, as the attorney general, decided to do an initiative. They were claiming that in schools around the country, minority kids were being punished unfairly. Then when it came to discipline, the numbers of minority children in terms of statistics was higher than whatever, probably white students, I'm guessing. And so somehow that had to change because it couldn't possibly be true that minority students were causing more trouble. It was because they were minorities. And so they decided to implement this program where schools would reduce the number of minority students who were brought up on discipline charges. But now there's more information this morning, and I want to share this with you. This is by Dr. Susan Berry, I should have had Susan on this morning, but this is her article, which we will put on our Facebook page because it is so incredible. It's Broward County likely inspiration for Obama school discipline policy to report fewer arrests, suspensions. Stay with me. The Broward County School District's adoption of a school discipline policy that was praised by the Obama administration for seeking to reduce the reported number of school suspensions, expulsions, and arrests may have played a role in the fact that Nicholas Cruz remained under the radar until his shooting rampage in Parkland, Florida on February the 14th. The Obama-era Departments of Education and Justice, under Education Secretary Arne Duncan and Attorney General Eric Holder, issued school guidelines in 2014 that claim students of color are disproportionately impacted by suspensions and expulsions, a situation they said leads to a school-to-prison pipeline that discriminates against minority and low-income students. Broward County was the first to have the goal of lowering suspensions, lowering expulsions, lowering arrests. And so they decided to reduce police involvement by not bringing in cops to arrest kids for a whole range of serious offenses. And then, as you would expect, the arrests go down when you stop arresting. That was taken to be a sign of success based on that metric alone. According to the Obama administration's 2014 Dear Colleague guidance, any school district whose disciplinary measures showed disparate impact, meaning a disproportionately greater number of minority students are affected, is open to investigation by the Departments of Justice and Education, regardless of whether the behavior leading to the discipline is unacceptable. And so the description goes like this. The Obama-era school discipline policy extended Black Lives Matter ideology into America's classrooms. Social justice activists assumed that just as racial disparities in the criminal justice system must be evidence that cops are at least implicitly racist, so too, racial disparities in school suspensions must be evidence that teachers are, at least implicitly, racist. Therefore, teachers, like cops, have to be restrained. All right, that's the premise, and that's how this thing factored out. There's more. Oh, is there ever more? So stay with me. The superintendent, the tall black gentleman that you saw standing behind the police chief, Scott, is named Robert Runcie. And he came to Miami-Dade or Broward County from Chicago. He was the assistant to, guess who, Arne Duncan, who was the Secretary of Education under Barack Obama. So Robert Runcie, very close then to the Obama administration and to these really rotten policies of the Education Department under Arne Duncan, he joined the NAACP, law enforcement, and government agencies to adopt the district's collaborative agreement on school discipline. They called it PROMISE. In the American thinker, Catherine Evans reports that in the academic year 2011-2012, just prior to the school board's decision to hire Runcie, The Broward County Public School District had 1,062 school-related arrests, the highest number in Florida. The Obama administration's Department of Education was also involved in implementing Promise. Obama, who routinely dangled carrots in the form of matching federal grants to local districts for their participation in Common Core and Race to the Top, doled out millions to Broward. Later on, I read that they received $54 million for reducing their numbers in punishing and arresting juveniles. $54 million in just one award. With the promise of federal monies, it's no surprise that Superintendent Runcie, whose annual salary is $335,000, was happy to oblige his friends in D.C. Within a year of Runcie's arrival, student arrest rates were down 66%, and Broward County schools were about to hit the federal jackpot. One of the premises of the Promise program cited in the agreement and supported by data from the Obama Department of Education Office for Civil Rights reads, whereas across the country, students of color, students with disabilities, and LGBTQ students are disproportionately impacted by school-based arrests for the same behavior as their peers. So here's the deal. This is what we were seeing under the Obama administration all around. It doesn't matter about the color if you are a person of color. In their mind, you are automatically singled out for arrest or discipline for committing a crime. And certainly, listen, and I have to say, I know that in the past, law enforcement's record on this was terrible. There's no question about that. But I think that the Obama administration swung way the other way, where they let people off the hook, did not arrest. We can see this with Cruz, for heaven's sake, 37 times called to his house. His record buried. No one, it seems as though they just didn't know. Gee, they didn't know, so they tell us. And this all happened with Broward being one of the first school districts to embrace this policy officially. They were already practicing it. And so let me just read. This is an article. This is Broward County Sheriff Union President Jeff Bell talking to Laura Ingram. He said a lot of liberal thinking principals on campus there, they don't want the police officers making arrests on campus, and they don't want the drugs to be found on campus, and they don't want the warrants to be served on campus because it looks like there's bad stats at the school. So when Promise, the program I've described to you under the Obama administration, when that program started, we took all discretion away from law enforcement officers to effect an arrest if we choose to. So Scott Israel was on with Jake Tapper on CNN. It sounds like Jake gave him a pretty hard time, actually, over this policy. And he actually talked about it. Israel recognized what Jake was challenging him on. He says, you're referring to this as the Promise Program. And it's giving the school has the ability under certain circumstances not to call the police, not to get the police involved on misdemeanor offenses and take care of it within the school. It's an excellent program. It's helping many, many people. What this program does is not put a person at 14, 15, 16 years old in the criminal justice system. So Jake says, does that not indicate that there is something seriously awry with the Promise Program if these teachers are being told, watch out for this kid and you don't know about it? And then Israel's response, I can't nor can any other Broward Sheriff's deputy handle anything or act upon something you don't know about. There's no malfeasance or misfeasance if you don't know about something. So let me just go on to say that another writer contributing to this article by Susan Berry says that in Washington, D.C., principals of nearly every high school systematically took suspensions off the books. They told teachers not to let those students back into school, but they never told central office about it. So how much troubling student behavior was never able to be processed because of the way administrators reacted to a shift that says we expect you to post lower numbers on disciplinary problems? There's a lot more to this. Well, there's more to this story, but we're going to post it on our Facebook page so that you can read it and share it. Please do, because we have to stop this. And when we return, let's open the phone lines. Our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. I would be particularly interested in any police officers who are listening, your view of this sheriff calling out his deputy, and also just the police's viewpoint on what's happening here. Teachers also would love to hear from you. And any of you who are seeing this same thing I'm talking about in your schools, We would love to hear your responses. 888-589-8840. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. CPAC is the oldest and largest annual conservative conference in America. However, they abruptly banned Mass Resistance, a Christian pro-family organization, from promoting their book, The Health Hazards of Homosexuality. But CPAC has granted exhibitor space to the Log Cabin Republicans, a group whose sole purpose is to homosexualize the Republican Party. Which group do you think poses the greatest risk to our nation? Republican and conservative are not synonymous terms.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
You shall not murder. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. This is the sixth commandment of the Ten Commandments. You shall not murder. We are asking schools all over America to put this on their marquees, put this on their signs out in front of their school for 1 week to remind America's students that innocent life is precious. Help us spread the word about this campaign to your friends and family. Please go to our website, afa.net, and sign our open letter to America's schools. We need to proclaim this message, you shall not murder, across the land. Why? Because gun control alone will not solve matters of the heart. We need our young people to understand that murder is a violation of God's law, and also it's a violation of the laws all across this land. So help us. Go to afa.net and spread the word.
Nearly one in four pregnancies in America will end in abortion. The Ministry of Preborn provides free ultrasounds for abortion-minded women throughout America. When a mother sees her baby on an ultrasound and hears the baby's heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to keep her baby.
They introduced me to my child for the first time through an ultrasound. I was able to see this life growing inside of me, hear the heartbeat, and nothing else mattered at that point. I wasn't afraid anymore. I got to meet my child for the first time, and it changed everything. I was a mother to be.
Your gift of $140 will cover the cost of 5 ultrasounds. All donations are tax deductible, and 100% of your gift goes to saving babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. Or donate securely at preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Author commentator Daniel Horowitz has long warned of judicial overreach. In a new column, he writes, quote, "While our country engages in a political civil war over Trump, the courts have granted Obama a third term, making most policy changes moot. If Congress fails to rein in the judiciary, there's literally no purpose to holding the midterm elections. After all, the judiciary has already largely gutted the 2016 presidential election," unquote. The particular concern is the practice of Obama-appointed federal judges to block Trump administration policies, not just in their own districts, but nationwide. Yesterday, the Supreme Court allowed such a ruling with respect to the so-called DACA kids to stand pending appeal. Fortunately, Virginia Congressman Dave Brat has proposed legislation designed to curb this sort of judicial tyranny that, as a practical matter, negates our electoral process and the voters' choices. It's needed now. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We want to have, as part of the gun initiative, though, an informational campaign to really change the hearts and minds of people in Washington, D.C., and in particular our young people. They are saturated in the media and in entertainment, or by the entertainment industry, with violence. And I think too many of our young people, in particular our young men, are fascinated with violence and in particular fascinated with guns. I've also asked the school board to make a part of every day some kind of anti-violence, anti-gun message. Every day, every school, at every level. One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply have a catchy ad on a Monday and then only do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
All right, it's part B that I'm most concerned about. That was your former Attorney General, Eric Holder. We need to brainwash kids on guns. We need to brainwash them. Oh, certainly, we don't want kids to embrace violence. It's true, video games, Hollywood. Why isn't no one talking about that? Eric Holder mentioned it. Good for him. But why does the conclusion have to be that we need to brainwash them about guns? How about if we give them good information about guns? And, you know, by the way, just could I interject, they're talking about lowering the age of being able to buy certain kinds of weapons until you're 21. You know, not all 18-year-olds are equal. They're not all the same. They're not all Nicholas Cruises. Some of them are on the battlefield protecting our country. Some are mature. They've grown up in families where they hunted. They understand. So when we start treating everyone equally, No, I don't mean equally. I mean the same. That's a different thing. We cannot all be treated the same because we have different qualifications and different abilities. Equal is a different thing. It has to do with their value. But we can't all be treated the same. Not all 18-year-olds are the same. All right, I want to tell you one more thing about Sheriff Israel before I go to the phones. Not only has he embraced this Promise program and received so much money. In fact, I was reading in one of the articles that he handed out cars with his face on them to various people in his department and to supporters of him. So there's something rotten in Denmark, shall we say. And not only that, but also, and I only have a second to touch on this, we'll put this on our Facebook page so that you can read it, so that you can read it in greater depth. One of the deputy sheriffs at Broward Sheriff's Office is Nazar Hamzi. Nazar Hamzi is the head of the Council for American Islamic Relations in that area. The Council for American Islamic Relations is a front group for Hamas, a terrorist organization. And there's a lot more to this story about Nazar Hamzi's connection to radical imams in Florida and Sheriff Israel going around the state, visiting, partnering, being buddies with all of these people. As if it weren't enough, he's also doing that. So we'll put that article, Sheriff Israel Embraces Deputy Hamas. It's an article by Joe Kaufman, and we'll put that on our Facebook page as well. But I want to hear what you have to say. Our phone number is 888-589-8840. Let's go to Becca in Kentucky. Good morning, Becca.
Good morning, Sandy. Couple comments. First off, my favorite verse at this time in which we live in a time of lawlessness, Psalm 119:126. It is time for thee, Lord, to work, for they have made void thy law. And lawlessness, and we've got so much coming at us, so many ideologies, and people's hearts have turned so wicked, first against the laws and the commandments of God. We've left the reverence in the heart of God. And so all these things are symptoms of that. And so we're being told all these things. And like you, I've got that, like, okay, we're seeing this, but what's really going on behind the scenes? And so Israel is, of course, taking, you know, the heat for all of this. But there's a lot at work, and we wonder what all was going on. And not only him, but everyone in that. And there's far more to this story. We don't know what happened. And so not to exonerate him, not because he should have, you know, if his heart was right, he'd have thrown down his weapons and just put himself in there.
Becca, you're talking about, you're saying there's a lot of deeper issues. There's no question about it. Thank you. Is it DJ? Is that right?
Yes, DJ. How you doing?
Good. How are you, DJ? Calling from Texas. What's your... I can't read what they said here, so you'll have to tell me what you want to say. Sorry.
That's okay. I wanted to start off by saying a man hath no greater love than he who lays down his life for another is really what I wanted to start out with. And to say, I'm a retired law enforcement officer. When I retired, I was, for the last couple of years prior to, I was teaching officers how to respond to active shooters. It's a program that's been happening in our country and that's been adopted by the FBI, the tactics and instruction has been going on really since the Columbine incident. And the greatest thing we learned out of the Columbine incident was that you do not wait for backup. In our teachings, we taught deputies how to respond directly to the source of fire to take out the threat by in groups of one, two, three, four, or five. And so that teaching has been in place for many, many, many years and is nationally known, nationally wide. So my response really is that, first of all, the deputies that were waiting outside were either one of two things. They were either completely inept and untrained and or cowardly, either way. If it's a training issue, then the sheriff definitely should stand down. There's no reason for them to not have had this training. This training is basically free and widely available. And our department, where I was a trainer, we had six trainers at our department, and it was a quarter the size of Broward County. So wow. There's no reason for those deputies to not be
DJ,
trained.
Thanks for that great information. But let me ask you this. Don't you think it's odd that the sheriff would immediately name a name and lay blame on a deputy, in spite of what you just said, without any kind of investigation or any time to really, I don't know. Does that seem odd to you?
Well, honestly, Sandy, it doesn't, because he's covering for his own. If this training's available, and I know he knows the training's available, and I know he knows that he didn't give it to him, because this response would not have occurred had these deputies had the training. I mean, it just screams of throwing somebody under the bus to protect yourself.
Well, that's exactly what I think too. So you're saying it makes sense, but you're not saying it makes sense like in a good way. That he's trying to cover himself.
No,
I think
but,
so too.
But it is a trend in this climate. A similar thing happened to me at the end of my career, where an incident which was absolutely clear was used for politicized purposes in order to further a sheriff's agenda. So it's happening across the country. Ever since Ferguson and those kinds of incidents occurred, it's very common for a department to throw deputies under the bus in order to protect their own selves and everything. And it's happening. It's also changed the minds of law enforcement as a whole across the country. It's one of the reasons I retired early, is because you're getting law enforcement officers who are afraid to engage because of the ramifications that may come due to the climate, being accused of things that they, either didn't do. If you take appropriate action, then you're liable to end up in court with criminal charges for taking that action. And likewise, now, if you don't take appropriate action, you're out of luck there, too.
Yeah. I know that, DJ. It's just sickening. It really is sickening. Before I let you go, I want to ask you about this story about the emergency medical teams claiming that they were delayed in going into the shooting. And I'm reading that they said that the students were being brought out of the school to them for treatment rather than letting them go in. What do you think about that story?
That's another failure in training. There's two sides to that. Actually, as part of the same active shooter response training that we did, we would set up triage spots inside of the school, create a safe zone. We would bring emergency medical into the school, and then we would start transporting law enforcement officers. Would start transporting patients to that triage area centrally located inside the school. And that's the nationally recognized response for emergency medical, is to create that center for that reason, so we can quickly triage. Even with basic training, you can pretty much triage whether or not somebody's got any and grade them, basically. So but the other side of that coin is that in many jurisdictions, fire and rescue will not enter. So in this case, it was law enforcement keeping them out. But there's also failure in training on the fire and rescue side. There's many that won't enter a zone like that. So I commend the fire and rescue for being willing to enter that zone, because in many areas they won't. So, that's a failure in training on both sides.
Isn't that something? Well, you know what? If anything good should come from this horrible thing, I just pray that it's actually addressing these very serious issues that go way beyond any discussion of gun control. And DJ, you just remind me of how sad it is that we are losing so many good men on the front lines of defense of this country in so many ways. So I'm sure you found another place to serve, but I think it's probably a great loss to us that you're not still active duty. But listen, thanks for your expertise this morning, and God bless you in every way. Thanks, DJ. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, DJ. I have to go on. I had to cut you off. Let's go to Bruce this morning in Oklahoma. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Sandy. Love your show. Listen to you every morning.
Thank you.
My thoughts keep going back to the parents of the children in that school district, and I understand that that is a very affluent school district. Am I wrong on that?
No, you're right.
Or is that correct?
No, that's correct.
Okay. Well, you know, there's a lot of money involved then. You know, when you're living in $600,000 homes, I have to believe that those parents knew what was going on in that school district with the cover-ups. I believe they were complicit with that. There may have been some money exchanged with the sheriff, because he is sure covering up that he is the one that's responsible and in control, but he may have a lot of people he's covering for. What do you think about that, Al?
Well, I don't think I would say that you are right. There's probably, I already told you, there's like 50, they received $55 million in some sort of a benefit from the education department because they reduced the number of students on the rolls, the numbers that they were arresting and charging. And that was supposed to be a wonderful thing. And that he was buying cars for people. So something's really rotten there. As far as the parents knowing, I don't think so, Bruce. I think parents, are not allowed to be, involved in schools in the same way they used to be. And I think school faculty, I'd say administration, are out of control. If you've ever gone before the school board and tried to plead your case about something, you understand this has been happening since my son was in school. We have lost control of our schools, and I don't think parents would have known about this particular thing. Very few of them, if any, I doubt, would know about this. Let's go to Carol in Texas. Good morning, Carol. Quickly, if you can.
Okay. I was listening to another talk show host, and a caller called in, talked about the Promise Program. He's a great teacher, and I think his background is also a military. Anyway, he quit because they covered up for an athlete that was passing illegal checks in school. And he said, I couldn't. They said, well, we can't do anything. They don't have any records of these people. And so I ended up calling the White House, which I often do, and left a message for the president to investigate this program.
Yeah. All right, Carol, good for you. Good for you. Monty, can you do 30 seconds? Monty in Virginia, 30 seconds, possible?
Let me make it very quick. Thank you, Sandy. I can assure you there are black robes still in the state of Virginia, which mean the pitchfork pastors who would take their robes off and fight for their country. Every tragedy that these liberals set up and pay for, they know are one step closer to getting rid of anything as National Rifle Association. We have a wonderful country, Sandy, and we have people who stand up for the First and Second Amendment rights regardless of what the liberals do.
Okay, well, Monty, let's pray that God would bless that effort to save our country in all the best possible ways. That's certainly my prayer this morning. Thanks to all of you. We need more conversation on this, and maybe we'll open the phone lines again this week. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.